Our call to worship is from the Reverend Kathleen McTeague. In this place of wood and stone, echoing with our music and our words, we make a sanctuary and name our home. Into this home, we bring a hunger for awakening. We bring compassionate hearts and a will toward justice. Into this home, we bring the courage to continue on after hard losses. Into this home, we bring our joy and our gratitude for ordinary blessings. By our gathering, we bless this place, and in its shelter, we know ourselves to be blessed. Please join me in the spirit of prayer. Spirit of life and Spirit of grace, rest with us this day in this place. We lift up every joy, every gladness. We hold up every hurt, every sadness spoken in this good company, as well as every feeling held quiet in our hearts. In our shared silence, we lift up those quiet things held close as prayer. This morning's reading is from the Reverend Joanna Fontaine Crawford. She writes a blog called Boots and Blessings. She serves our church in Live Oak, Texas. To love the hell out of the world means to love it extravagantly, wastefully, with an overpouring abandon and fervor that sometimes surprises even yourself. That love flows out of you sometimes slow and steady, sometimes in a torrent, sometimes filled with joy, sometimes filled with fierceness or anger or a heart-breaking pain. So much love that comes crashing down on you. Gifts from the heavens in the form of smiles and cares from others, a giggle burbling up from a toddler's fat little belly, the soft, sweet smell of star jasmine catching you unaware, not knowing where it came from, but it's here. And you're here. And just to live swells your heart with enough gratitude and love that you must release it or burst. And so you love. Love the hell out of the world. Without scale, without ratio, without carefully allotting how much you will give versus how much you will receive. You love because you must. You know how it goes with a train of thought. It leaves the station and I'm on it. Pretty sure I know where I'm going. Then, a few twists and turns later, I'm surprised to find out where I've come. And so it was I ended up thinking about love and Tina Turner. I've loved her since I first heard her sing Proud Mary. I will not break out my Proud Mary dance to you just yet, but I could at any moment. I loved her energy, and I loved her presence, and I loved her dancing. And I do know it's early, but here's a little bit of Tina Turner. What's love got to do with it? What's love but a secondhand emotion? What's love got to do with it? Who needs a heart when a heart can be broken? Tina recorded that song over 30 years ago, and it is the biggest selling single of her career. I didn't know very much about her life back then. I know a lot more now. Tina was an unwanted child, a victim and a survivor of domestic violence, a woman who lost and then recreated her life as a singer, a believer in the power of love, a practicing Buddhist, the queen of rock and roll, now a Swiss citizen. Her latest recordings are a collection of both Christian and Buddhist prayers. What's love got to do with it? Could so honestly be the refrain after each verse of her life story. For Tina, love prevails. What's love got to do with it? In a word, everything. I have two stories to share with you this morning in the spirit of love prevailing. They are both from our larger community of faith. The first is from 2001. Hillary Goodridge, a Unitarian Universalist and the director of the UU funding program, and her partner Julie, along with several other same-sex couples, were in that year denied marriage licenses by the State Department of Health. With the Goodridges as lead plaintiffs and gay and lesbian advocates and defenders attorney Mary Bonato representing all plaintiff couples, those denials and the case for marriage equality went to the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court. 3 years later, the court sided with the plaintiffs. Then Chief Justice Margaret Marshall wrote, quote, "The marriage ban works a deep and scarring hardship on a very real segment of the community for no rational reason. Limiting the protections, benefits, and obligations of civil marriage to opposite-sex couples violates the basic premises of individual liberty and equality under the law protected by the Massachusetts Constitution." Throughout the 3 years leading up to the court's decision, Unitarian Universalists across the state rallied and lobbied. They wrote letters and op-eds and sermons. Many of our clergy refused to sign any marriage license until all couples had the right to marry. During the 180-day waiting period that followed the court's decision, a period of time given so the state legislature could take any action it thought appropriate, a huge banner hung on the Unitarian Universalist Association office building on Beacon Street. It hung on the side facing the state house so every legislator, every day, could see the message, "Civil marriage is a civil right." 180 days passed. Hillary and Julie Goodridge were married in the chapel at the UUA in May of 2004. love prevails. The next story is from 4 years later, July of 2008. A man entered the sanctuary of the Tennessee Valley Unitarian Universalist Church in Knoxville, Tennessee, during a Sunday service when some of the congregation's children were presenting the musical Annie. He carried a guitar case that carried a gun. He killed two people, Greg McKendry and Linda Lee Krager. After his arrest, police found a manifesto he had written about his hatred for liberals as motivation for his action. On the one-year anniversary of this tragedy, the minister of Tennessee Valley Unitarian Universalist Church, the Reverend Chris Bice, preached a sermon about the shootings and about the year since. He remembered mostly how the congregation had been surrounded with love and support from so many in the community. People of all different faiths showed up, folks who reflected the full spectrum of political points of view showed up, individuals and families and businesses and congregations from neighborhoods all over that city showed up. He remembered how much it mattered that so many offered their support to the congregation. In the aftermath of the shooting, he wrote, church members put up a wonderful banner that declared, love is the spirit of this church. They placed it outside of the building on the main road for everyone passing by to see. An outward and visible sign of the inward commitment of this church. One more time, love prevails. This morning, you've heard sung and you have spoken, we have spoken, the covenant that is included in each of our services. Earlier versions of that same statement began, love is the doctrine of this church. Whether doctrine or spirit, it is the lived teaching about the essential nature of something, doctrine or spirit. The essential teaching about the nature of something. The essential nature, then, of First Parish Church is love. How is that teaching lived here? What examples come to mind? That doesn't need to be a rhetorical question. What examples come to mind? Yes. Yeah. Reaching out to those in need. Mother and child. Holding up each other's children. Compassion and empathy. Helping wherever needed. Stories from City Reach. Service projects like support for the Stowe Food Pantry and for Buddy Dog, too. in all those ways, and in many, many more, love prevails here too. I think it matters that a little bit of the history of this covenant is brought into the room this morning. The words that we say, they are said in many other Unitarian Universalist congregations as well, those words have their roots in a neighbor church, the first church and parish in Dedham at the time of its founding in 1637. 2 years earlier, the General Court had awarded 30 families a parcel of land and a permission to found a town. Having come from different places in their home country, those British colonial families were strangers to one another, and so they decided to hold weekly neighborhood meetings, lovingly to discourse and consult together, they said, and prepare for spiritual communion in a church society. They were seeking the liberty of the gospel in their terms. We might think of those terms today as religious freedom, independent from, in their case, the Church of England. They were interested in freely organizing, indirectly experiencing the spirit of love through their own fellowship and through their collective religious wisdom. They were interested in establishing new traditions for membership and for worship and ritual. And they wanted new governance practices that would allow them to decide for themselves. These 30 families, these founding members, established a meeting house in Dedham with no religious or denominational affiliation, there to join, as they said, in a covenant of religious loyalty to the spirit of love. Even then, love, as those Dedham families understood it, prevailed. Their story is our history. The founding of the free church, which we are, the right to be self-governing, which we have, the decision to join in association with other congregations, which we have done, and the right to claim love as a doctrine, as the spirit of this church, which we do daily. If we were to bring that history onto our landscape, into today, it would probably sound a little different than it did to those 30 families in Dedham. It might sound something like this. These are the words of Alice Blair Wesley, who is a liberal church historian. She wrote, "The integrity of the free church comes down to our loyalty to the spirit of love at work in the hearts and minds of members. We need to examine together our own deepest loves, that we can try to see whether or not we are living by right loves or by some misplaced, inappropriate love for less than worthy realities." Living by right loves for worthy realities. Equality under the law, streets and schools and congregations where no guns are found or fired. Justice, the face of love in public. Freedom, adequate to human dignity, which is freedom to do what love asks of us. We have come far, and we are not done. Love is the doctrine, the spirit of this church, and because we are not done, we also covenant to dwell together in peace, to seek the truth in love, and to help one another. We have come far, and we are not done. And because we are not done, at the end of each service, we offer our covenant back to one another as a blessing. As life lays its task before you, keep love's banner floating o'er you. So may it be.